Hey, welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. Tate Duryea here with Ryan Gibson on another episode. How you doing, Ryan?
Oh, man. We just interviewed a guest that gave us probably the most heartwarming love letter to aviation retirement story that I've ever heard of. I'm so excited about this to share this with our listeners. It was so much fun. I'm doing great.
A legend, a newborn legend, because this just happened. It's been all over the news. And yeah, we have the Delta captain that chartered the A330neo to Hawaii for his retirement flight.
Yeah. As airline pilots, we always joke around about what will we do on our last flight. We'll steal the airplane and fly it home to our own house or whatever and land and abandon it there and let them come fetch it or whatever, but you'd end up arrested. So don't do that. You hear all these old airline captain retirement stories. Literally, this is the most legendary airline pilot story in retirement story ever. There is nothing, nobody has ever done anything like this. And we're not going to ruin the story. Keith tells the story at the end of the episode of what he did. And of course, this is a Passive Income Pilot podcast. So we're talking about passive income. So we're going to talk about how Keith positioned his career, how he saved, how he invested, how he's retired and he's earning passive income. And he has the means to actually go spend an airline captain's salary to go do an amazing retirement party. But it's just an incredible story. So
absolutely. Yeah, it was heartwarming. The guy is a complete class act, has had an incredible military career, an incredible airline career. He's just one of those guys that you would want to fly with. You'd really enjoy flying with someone like this.
Yeah, you know those trips you go on and the captain is buying the pizza and the beer and helping out with the crew and just a gentleman or a lady and a scholar and just an upstanding individual. Somebody who you're just like, this is who I aspire to be like.
Absolutely.
As an airline pilot, right? That's who this guy is. And I know you always dream of, as an airline pilot, like having the perfect career. This guy had the perfect career and an absolute amazing send-off for his last flight. So if you're wondering what to do on your retirement flight, like, this guy wrote the book on it, on how to do a send-off and how to have a lot of fun with everybody who's touched you and been part of your life, from growing up in the neighborhood to the guy you flew with on your last trip, whatever it might be.
Absolutely. I will note that when we talked a bunch about the investing strategy sort of in the middle of the episode, I was surprised. I was expecting if someone was going to spend a wide-body captain salary, yearly salary on a flight, that they would have some pretty expansive investment holdings. And what's cool about this is he did it on a very, I don't want to say pedet, we will, and I don't want to ruin it, but it just goes to show that if you put very basic building blocks in place, and if you're listening to this show and you're implementing some of the real advanced stuff, it's just, it's incredible how successful you could be. But anyway, Keith Rosenkranz, the man, the myth, the legend, that chartered the A330 to take 112 friends and family members to Hawaii for his retirement flight. Without further ado,
let's get to it.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Keith, thank you so much for joining us. It is an honor to have you on the show. Everyone has heard about this story in aviation. I'm so excited to be able to share you with our listeners and get the story firsthand. So welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your having me.
Yeah.
Keith, when I read your story, it just brought me so much happiness and joy. It's like why I got into flying in the first place. And I feel like you had the perfect career. I always think about how I want to be as a captain, how I want to end my career, how I dreamed of being a pilot when I was a kid. And I feel like you just saw the whole thing so perfectly. You had the military career, you had the awesome career at Delta, and just, if you wouldn't mind, just give us kind of an overview of where you came from and your background.
Thank you. I grew up in Southern California and lived for a while right behind the Santa Monica Airport. And my mom was divorced and she used to put me on a Continental jet to Arizona for a month every summer to visit with my father. And my face was always glued to the window looking outside the entire flight. So I think just being by an airport and those flights back and forth to Phoenix got me hooked. And then I went to high school at St. Bernard's, which is right by 24 Wright, at LAX. And on rainy days, I used to sit in the second story window and just eat my lunch and watch the planes take off and land. And I thought, that's what I'd love to do one day. And finished high school, went off to college at Long Beach State University. I was on the baseball team. That was not going to go anywhere. And the brand new Air Force KC-10s were landing right over the field at McDonnell Douglas in Long Beach. I went to talk to an Air Force recruiter, put me in touch with the ROTC unit at Loyola Marymount, and started taking the courses. And I was commissioned in December of 22 and went off to pilot training at Reese Air Force Base in Lubbock, Texas in April of 83. Newly married, Colette and I had just gotten married in June of 82. So we headed off to Reese Air Force Base, Lubbock, Texas. Quite a change from Los Angeles, California, as you can imagine. Went through pilot training. I had always wanted to fly that KC-10. Did not get that out of pilot training. I was brought back as a T-38 instructor pilot. And so I spent an extra 3.5 years at Reese Air Force Base instructing UPT students. And that entire time, I wanted to fly that KC-10. And so toward the end of my time at Reese, I used to have this program that I ran called Buddy Wing, where pilots from Reese can go to other commands, get a ride. Other commands can come to Reese, get a ride in a T-37 or T-38 and decide if that was the course they wanted to take. So my boss let me go to Barksdale and get a KC-10 ride. So I'm on this KC-10 in the cockpit for 4 hours. We're going to refuel some A-10s. And the pilots turn around, "What the heck do you want to fly this thing for? We don't get any flying time. They make us sit alert in Saudi Arabia. Gosh, if I could fly a fighter, I'd do it in a minute." So I came home, I told Kalai, I said, "Gosh, these guys hated it. I want to be challenged." So I was the instructor for our wing commander. And he said, "Rosie, put down an F-16. That's the best path for you." So I did, and that's what I got. Went through F-16 training at Luke. My first tour was a one-year remote at Kunsan, Korea. I left when my twin girls were 4 months old. So all of a sudden, maybe that KC-10 didn't sound so bad.
Yeah, right.
But the tour of Korea at the time was hard because you miss your family and being gone a year is a long time. But when you're older and you look back, what an incredible tour that was. Great flying. Every night was a Friday night at the officers club. Great friends, great camaraderie. Did that. Ended up at Hill Air Force Base in Salt Lake after. And no sooner did we get there, Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. We deployed to the United Arab Emirates, and I was there for 6 months. Ended up flying combat missions during the war. Got 10 Maverick missile kills on the highway of death north of Kuwait City. And my last flight in the F-16, and we'll get back to this in a little bit, was February 28th, 1991. And so got two more kills on the highway of death, came home, back to the base, and then the war ended that night, came back to Hill. Put in my papers, got hired by Delta and started training in July of 91. I spent 7 years as a second officer on the panel on the 727. I was furloughed for 7 months of that. And then eventually got to the right seat of the 727, flew that for 4 years. That was a great job. And then upgraded to the right seat of the 75767. And back to the story of when I was in high school and looking out of that window at the planes taking off and landing. It was 14 years after graduating college, Air Force, and the first time I'm taken off in a Delta jet out of LAX, I look down and I see that window, and as I made it.
That's so cool.
Still emotional.
Nice.
And so for the last 33 years, I made a point every time I took off out of LAX to look at that window and dip the wing. And in case any young boy or girl's looking out, wanting to fly one day, that was where I came from. So flew the 75767 for 12, 13 years, finally upgraded to captain on the 320, did that for 6 years, and then went to the A330 in the left seat for my final 2 or 3 years. And all of a sudden you snap your fingers and it's over. 41 years of flying.
That's so cool.
Yeah. That's amazing. You always loved aviation. You wanted to get into it as a kid, but what was better about it than you ever anticipated as a kid? Like what you, after this long career, what surprised you about flying in your career?
I love the challenge of it. And I love seeing the world. And whether I was in an F-16, a T-38, or in an A-330, I always had a window seat to the world. And as a former Air Force officer, I've stood in Red Square in Moscow. If I wanted a nice steak dinner, Nice. I go down to Buenos Aires or Santiago, Chile, and have a great steak for dinner. And I think the flying itself was always exciting and fun. I went to talk to the eighth grade class at my old elementary school or students at my old high school. I'd always ask them, when do you think the last time was I worked? And they say, oh, last week or yesterday. And I would tell them, I haven't worked since 1983 when I was at Safeway Supermarket. Ever since then, I've been getting paid to fly jets. It was just a great, rewarding time that just seemed to pass in an instant.
I can relate to that so much. I, for years, was flying wide bodies as an FO, and I used to call my airline my trust fund. I said, I just do fun stuff. I get to fly to these fun places and have these incredible experiences, and money shows up every 2 weeks for no reason. And that's exactly the way I felt. Now, I went to the left seat and worked a little bit over the last bit, but I am officially, this is my last layover on IOE, going back to the right seat as a first officer in the 330, just because I wanted to be super senior. So I can definitely relate to that, man. That's
congratulations. So cool. It's a great jet. You'll love it.
Yeah, I flew it as an FO before I upgraded 8 years ago. So okay. I just spent 8 years in the left seat, and then I just pulled the plug to go back to the right to enjoy a really great schedule. So
that's what it's all about. Quality of life.
Absolutely. Speaking of quality of life, what were the difficult times in your aviation career, and what did those teach you? You said you were furloughed for how long? What did that teach you? 7 months. And what was it like going through that for a lot of the young people out there that have not been through a bankruptcy cycle or a furlough? What wisdom do you have to share with them?
I went to give a talk to the student body at Embry-Riddle in Florida many years ago. And a lot of it was about, I'd written a book called Vipers in the Storm about my F-16 experiences during the Gulf War. So they invited me out. And during the Q&A portion, they wanted to know, hey, I want to be where you're at one day, but I don't know which direction to go. Should I go through the military? Should I go through civilian? So I took about 10 minutes and I talked about all my military experiences, instructing in the T-38, flying the F-16, going to war, being qualified for special weapons, and how great the responsibility was, how incredible the flying was. And then I came over and I said, at Delta Airlines, I'm number 5825, and I stopped. And my point being was, in the military, you have a lot of responsibility. You have clearances, you have incredible challenges. In the airline, I'm a number, and I learned that. When it came time to furlough, I thought I was going to be okay, and I was in Buffalo on a layover. And we're at the gate, and the gate agent said, hey, is Keith Rosenkrantz here? I said, yeah, I'm right here. Yeah, you got a phone call. You need to call this number. I'm like, who do I know in Buffalo? And I called the number. Well, it was a chief pilot in Dallas telling me I was getting furloughed 2 weeks from them. So I think the hard part was just being a number and not having all the responsibilities anymore or that I'd had in an F-16 in the Air Force. And the other hard part was not knowing when I was going to come back. And ironically, when we came back from the Gulf War, some of my friends weren't really interested in getting out of the Air Force yet. I want to get 1,000 hours in the F-16, they would tell me. Getting a couple of flights a month, all of a sudden, hey, I want to be at Delta, or I want to be at American or United, wherever. That time difference between them getting hired and me getting hired, they were on furlough for 3 years. I was 7 months and then I was back. And so those were hard times. You didn't know when you're going to come back. You got to take care of your family and stuff. Fortunately, my wife had a great job and I was only out 7 months. So with unemployment, with furlough pay and savings, I was okay. I didn't have to get a job. But I knew there was going to be a point out there in the future, if I didn't get called back by then, yeah, I was going to start putting applications out.
Keith, one thing you always tell people is every day in our industry is September 10th. And you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. What do you mean by that? And how do you financially prepare for something like that?
What I meant by it is we look at our industry and how things were the day before 9/11. And then after 9/11, when planes were grounded and people were in fear, and it was just a different industry after that. And I would tell my first officers that. And then my one friend, Rusty, he used to laugh at me and he'd say, yeah, you'd always tell me that. And I'd think, yeah, that doesn't mean anything. Then COVID hit. And all of a sudden he said, you know what? I remember you telling me that. And when COVID hit, all of a sudden it was the same thing. The industry was on its knees, so to speak. So that's what I meant by that. And going back, When I left the Air Force, I took a 50% pay cut. I was a captain. It was summer of 91. I had about $13 in an IRA. That's all I had. I was 32 years old. And so my very first trip with Delta, the captain gave me the best advice I'd ever received. He turned around during a flight. He says, "I hope you have a great career. Here's my advice for you financially. Take 50% of every raise you get and save it. Take the other 50% and improve your lifestyle." And so I made a point throughout my career of taking that advice and living within my means, which I think is hard for people to do. We all covet nice things, and how many people have a finance charge on their credit card every month because they don't pay it off. So I always felt living within my means was important. I always put 10% into the 401k. And at the time, Delta had a defined benefit program that they funded. And if you were a 30-year Delta pilot that was going to retire at age 60, typically those guys would get a lump sum, which was half of their defined benefit. They'd probably take home about $1.2 million in their lump sum. The other half would stay in an annuity that would pay them about 70 grand a year the rest of their career or their life, and then whatever they had in their 401k. And so I was managing my own money, no clue what I was doing. I'd see a mutual fund that was up 30%. Oh, that's where I need to put my money. It might be up 30% this year, and next year maybe down 10%. I had no idea what I was doing. So by word of mouth, first officer I'd flown with said, "Oh, you need to talk to this guy that I work with. He's a Delta pilot, but when he was on furlough, he got involved with finance and taking care of managing others' finances. He never came back to fly." So I gave him a call, and he took a look at my portfolio, which wasn't much, and he agreed to work with me. And I would say the magic word is diversification. If you were to go into my Fidelity account, you'd probably see 4 or 5 dozen different funds and stocks and things that he's got spread out across the board. And that really was the best decision I'd made as far as management of my money, was having somebody that really knew what they were doing take care of that. Now, on the other half of the equation, in a way, when Delta went through its bankruptcy, that was tough for people. I can remember in the months leading up, going on a trip to Europe, and the captain would walk in, never met him before, and he would say, "I'm out of here at the end of the month. Talk to my wife, talk to my financial advisor. I can't afford for us to go bankruptcy and lose my lump sum. End of the month, I'm done." And on the way across the Atlantic, they talk about all the things they were going to do. And the next day we get in the jet, "I can't do it. I'm not leaving." Their hair was falling out. They were just a wreck. And the bankruptcy took a toll on people. Some people lost all their 401k matching funds from Delta. Mine was about 80,000 gone. In the bankruptcy, Delta was trying to file an 1113 motion that would basically end our contract. And as that time went through and discussions, they ended up converting to a defined contribution, which started. And everybody in bankruptcy court has a claim against the company, whether you're a caterer or a pilot with a contract, whatever. You end up getting pennies on the dollar because the judge usually wipes off all the debt, gets a fresh start, a new stock. And during that period, Doug Parker from US Air tried to do a hostile takeover of Delta. And it made the value of our claim worth about 61 cents on the dollar. And the union sold that to some hedge fund. And then the company said to the pilot union, "If you agree not to challenge us in court for ending the defined benefit, we'll give you $50 million in note money." Some of these figures may be off, but that's what I remembered. So we had 61% of $2.1 billion, and we had this note money. So the union came up with a formula based on your age, what aircraft you flew, how much you made, what seat you're in, you got a payout. So I was 48 years old, right seat 767ER, and my payout was roughly $156,000. And that was going to replace whatever the defined benefit was going to be. And so sometime shortly thereafter, they changed from 60 to 65, and they took that money. Whatever your payout was, I think some of the senior captains' payouts were like $350,000. And so they filled up your 401k and defined contribution to the government limits the first 2 years. So you didn't get taxed all of it. And then on the last year, they paid out whatever was left over in your claim money, and you had to pay tax on that. I think that for me was about 80 some thousand. Then, as much as people knock our union, here's what they did that was really magic for myself. They lobbied Congress, and before George W. Bush left office, he signed into law that gave everybody a one-time opportunity to put the entire amount of their claim and note money into a Roth IRA with no limitation. So I took that $156,000, which I had, I put it in a Roth IRA, and I bought 300 shares of Apple at $136 and some other stocks. And
that worked out well.
That worked out very well. And I eventually, with all their splits and growth, I got to a point where I had 22,000 shares of Apple. Now, I'm not a genius when it comes to making stock picks, but you'd have to be sleeping under a rock the last few years to not know what companies like Apple and Amazon and Google have accomplished. And so as time has gone by, I was able to build that Roth IRA up, I'll be honest with you, $2.5 million. It's tax-free the rest of my life. And then the other part in the 401k, which I don't have to make any withdrawals till I think 72 or 73. I probably shouldn't even have to ever touch it. And so I've taken to heart what that captain told me. And I would have every month my two paychecks, several thousand of that would just go in a separate account, a savings account. So when I say live within my means, it was based on the amount, not counting that extra money. When the end of the year came, that $50,000 worth of savings, I could pay my property taxes, my home insurance, my life insurance, car insurance, any big ticket items that are due once a year, I could take care of that. Or I could just invest it, whatever I wanted to do. And to this day, I've always lived that way. So it's a long story, but that's the way I did it. And I know there's a lot of pilots, and I've had these discussions on Widget, because there's definitely a group, they call themselves the dead zoners, which by definition I am. But we all had that opportunity. Now, the guys that were former Northwest, I get it. They had a different thing to go by, but I can get PBGC money here starting at 65. I could have started taking it at 60, but the longer you hold off, the more it's worth and stuff. So I'll start that at 65. And my wife started taking Social Security at 62. I'll wait till 70, which will maximize what I take out. And if for some reason I pass away at 68, my wife bumps up to whatever mine will be. And then I can have the PBGC money at a 50% or 75% or complete total paid to her, depending on what I decide in case I pass before her. So
I love that this is, it's like, how do you get rich slowly and with lots of diversification and with cash management? That really is the secret sauce. And I love that this is a really unsexy story. It's not like you were investing in cryptocurrency and doing all this crazy stuff. It's like, you know, Keith, you just saw opportunities to slowly have base hits all the way throughout your career and put away money. And that's sort of what we try and open eyes about.
Well, it was also a basic operating system, right? It was like, take half your pay raise and invest half and correct. Lifestyle half, right? And live within your means. So that was the OS of your career. And it worked out tremendously. And also, I like the CRM approach of like you built your team by getting a financial advisor that helped you help diversify what you had in your portfolio as well. So I like the expanding the team. I like the OS of the operating system of basically just 50% pay raises. This is what you're going to do with it. Live within your means. And eventually that nest egg grows. And now you've got passive income streams coming off of those investments that you've made over your career.
People always ask. Yeah. And my first officers would always ask, how much do you think I need for retirement? $1 million, $2 million? And I would always tell them, that's not the right question to ask. The right question to ask is, how much debt do I have? Because I think most financial advisors would suggest you withdraw 4% a year from your retirement nest egg to make that last over time. So I would tell the first officers, sit down with your spouse or by yourself. You're going to turn 65. And ask yourself, what is my complete living expense every year? And if you determine it costs $80,000 to live, vacations, taxes, groceries, a Starbucks every week, whatever. If it costs you $80,000 to live, you need $2 million. 4% of $2 million is $80,000 a year. And when I would have these discussions, I would say, at age 65, you probably should have bought all the toys you've wanted in life. Hopefully, you're not on your third marriage and you've got 3-year-olds running around. that you're going to have to fund college for in 20 years.
That's a different episode.
And, you know, maybe you've had your home paid off. I was fortunate where I could buy a second home. I've paid those both off. I'm still, my primary home is the one I bought when I was a brand new second officer in the fall of 91. And so my girls just say, why can't we have this big house like our friends do? I said, because that's just not how we're going to live. You have a nice home, you're comfortable, and you're going to go to nice schools. And we have this place up in the mountains you can go ski at and hike at and stuff. We don't need a 5,000 square foot home where you're thinking, gosh, what's the electrical bill going to be for this one this month? So right. I would always tell the first officers, everybody's different. If you've got 17,000 pilots, you've got 17,000 different opinions. You've got 17,000 different ways to save and invest. But think about what your debt is going to be and go off of that. That doesn't include Social Security. It doesn't include PBGC money if you're somebody who's eligible for that.
Yeah. And I think when you say debt, I think we think loans, or at least that's where my head goes. But I think that just really, it's add up all your expenses. What are all your expenses going to be when you retire? And what will that need be for how much cash your portfolio effectively produces when you get to retirement? And if you can, that's what the show is literally all about. It's about generating passive income streams so that you can cover your expenses and with the profit of being able to do some fun things right in life and have more financial freedom. So you're not stressing the furlough. You're not stressing the layoff. You're not stressing the airline bankruptcy. You've got that protection that's going to keep you going, right? And keep your family going. And the smaller you make those expenses, the less revenue you need to produce to make your life work.
Pay off your credit card every month. Unless it's some sort of an emergency, there's never a reason to have a finance charge of whatever, 20% on a credit card.
Absolutely.
And there's never, unless again, every family is different, but try not to borrow against your 401k, things like that.
So, I did an episode on that. There's definitely strategies around that, but that's a different episode.
I got to ask. So you're the kind of guy that save, don't live within your means, don't have the big fancy house. But here you are, renting a wide body to fly everybody to Hawaii. Talk to us about that a little bit. I think it's cool, that, right? That's like a left brain, right brain. It's two extremes, right?
Going back to COVID, some of my friends that were close to retirement, ready to retire, one of my buddies was flying international. All the international was grounded. So his Finney flight was a flight to Orlando and back. And I told him, I said, you know what? I'm not doing that. And the chief pilots, there were so many people retiring as things started up back to normal. The chief pilots say, hey, we're not doing this deal anymore where we give you a better trip. You bid what you bid and you get what you get and good luck. A friend of mine works in the charter division in scheduling. And I called her up. I said, hey, Nancy, I've flown a lot of charters through the years, NBA teams, NFL teams. Could I charter my own jet for my retirement flight? She goes, I don't see why not. I don't think anybody's ever done it before, but I'll tell you what, next time you have recurrent training, why don't you come over to the office? I'll introduce you to our director and we can have a discussion about it. So October of 22, I'm sitting in the office with the director of the charter division. And I said, my birthday for turning 65 will be June 7th of 24. And I want to charter my own A330 for my final flight. And he looked perplexed. He goes, nobody's done this before. I said, I'll be the first. As time went by, we talked about it. They gave me a number, which I thought was way too high. And I said, look, I'm not the Seattle Seahawks here. I'm a fellow employee. So can we look at it from that perspective? And he smiled. He goes, okay, we'll look at that. And so when I was waiting for the email with the number, I was thinking, okay, what's my limit here? How far am I willing to go? The number came in under my limit. I said, all right, let's do it. So my first thought was, do I want to go to Maui? And I looked at the runway length, about what, 8,500 feet?
7,000.
How much is it?
7,695.
Yeah. Okay. So I said, I don't want to make anybody at Delta uncomfortable. Hey, this guy wants to take a 330 into a short landing. So then I looked at Kona. I said, oh my gosh, Kona's got 11,000 feet of runway. Plus the Delta layover hotel is this Hilton Waikoloa resort. Perfect. We'll go to Kona. A year and a half of planning and working with the caterers, working with transportation, I came up with 112 family and friends as guests because the transportation company had two big coach buses that seated 56 each. There's my 112. The crew would have their own transportation because it's a Delta layover. I would get paid to fly the trip. I would get a free room because I'm a pilot flying the trip. And I'm also paying for the trip itself. You can't fly an ocean crossing and a domestic in the same day. So I'm going to need two extra pilots. And so from the Dallas to LA, LA to Dallas portions, one of my friends who's a Detroit 330 captain would fly the domestic legs as captain. And then my other friend, who I happened to be a box boy with at Safeway Supermarket when we were 16 years old, he went off to Alaska to fly in the Guard after college. I went on active duty. He's a line check airman out of Seattle, so he could sit in the right seat, even though he's a captain. And so he agreed to fly the domestic portion. And then one of my buddies who I flew with a lot on the 320 when he was in the right seat, he flew as my co-pilot. And like I said, I had a catering allowance of $15,000, worked with a great person in Delta Catering, came up with a great menu for breakfast, lunch, dinner for all the different guests. And I came up with all my guest list, gave everybody an opportunity to pick whatever they wanted on their menu, either steak or salmon or whatever it was they wanted. I wanted Dove ice cream bars for dessert, all the beer and wine and spirits, what everybody wanted, it was available. So
that's
where that started. And it got a lot of attention as time would go by. And it was fun. I remember I was on a layover a few months before the trip. And I would talk about it with my first officers and stuff in Seattle. And so we're going from the hotel in Long Beach to LAX. I was getting ready to go to Japan. And this other young first officer was heading somewhere else. And so his flight was delayed. Our flight was delayed. We're in the pilot lounge. And there's about seven or eight of us sitting around. And somebody says, "You're retiring, aren't you?" And all of a sudden that young kid goes, "Hey, you need to be like that guy that's chartering his own A330. I go, "I am that guy." His eyes got real big. He goes, "What?" I go, "I am that guy." So it was really fun.
That's great.
And Delta bent over backwards to make this work for me. And I asked for an A330-900. I asked for the Olympic jet. They made everything happen.
That's so cool.
It's an incredible airline overall. I mean, just an incredible place to work and just a world-class operation. That doesn't surprise me at all. It's really cool that they took care of you to do that. And obviously you paid them, but
everybody
cool.
wants to know how much it costs. And I know you're not sharing actual numbers, but can you give people a ballpark?
I've always told people that it was a good year's salary for an international A330 captain at Delta.
There you
so
go. There
those
you
of
go.
You that are listening to this podcast can probably figure that out.
Yeah.
That is but here's amazing. Here's one neat thing. When I signed the contract, it was at a set fuel price. And there was going to be a plus up or plus down, depending on what the actual fuel cost was the day of the trip. So I'm getting a nice five-figure refund because oil was a lot lower when I actually flew the trip.
Oh, that's nice bonus.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Okay.
So who did you invite? Like you got the idea, this thing sort of picked up steam. Who'd you invite? Tell us about the trip. And you got a water cannon salute in LA, right? Is that because the news had gotten out? They knew what you were doing?
I'll get to that. I had friends from every aspect of my life. I had some of my grade school friends that I've known since we were 6 years old. I had high school friends. I had Air Force friends. I had childhood friends from the neighborhood. I had Delta friends. I had for my triathlon team, my coach and other friends that I've done marathons and Ironmans with were there. Neighbors from where I live today. It was just a big group of friends from every aspect of my life. And I told my wife, I said, this could be just like a wedding. It could be like a retirement. And I said, it also could be a funeral. So if anything happens to me between now and the trip, make sure you still go and just have all my friends there to celebrate. So I sent, I had professional invitations made that I thought were just beautiful with the black and the gold. And I had a hat and the epaulets and I had those sent out. I had a couple people that couldn't make it, which I understood. You're not going to get every single person to come, but I had a standby list of a lot of people that wanted to go. And I ended up asking a lot of my friends, hey, not that I don't care about your spouses, but I don't know them my whole life. would you mind if your spouse didn't come so I can invite more friends that I've grown up with? Everybody was more than happy to do that. And so I had the 112 guests. I had the crew, two charter coordinators. We had a Delta mechanic for the entire trip, the four pilots, seven flight attendants. So there's about 134, give or take a couple total for the trip. So going back to Los Angeles, living behind the Santa Monica Airport, when you come in on an airline from the west or from the north, there's a VOR at the bottom of the hill for Santa Monica. And the planes would always come in and then head on a downwind for a right turn to final, and you're lined up with a 2-4 right or 2-5 left. Mm-hmm. I used to, as a kid, always see those jets overhead. And I just was always enamored with that. So flying out of LAX was going to really be neat for me because that's where it all started. And so I had my friends fly the Dallas to LAX flight, and I knew that last takeoff out of LAX, I was going to look at that window at the high school again and dip that wing one more time. So it finally came, and the morning of, we had a 7 a.m., 7:30 departure, and I was trying to get everybody going because I had a special plan in mind that nobody knew about, and I'll get to that in a minute. So by the time we got out to the jet on the ramp in DFW, they had decorated it with a lot of pictures and everything from my past. And there were probably about 50 some friends that were in the gate area when I arrived with my wife and my mom and stuff. So it was very emotional and seeing everybody. And people had flown in from back east, California, because they wanted to be on the entire trip. They didn't want to just get on in LA. So we pushed back, and it was neat because they did a water cannon salute on the taxi out of DFW. I hadn't even landed yet. And so they're already doing a water cannon salute. So my friend Jay and Pete flew the leg to Dallas to LA. And what was neat is that I can go back and visit with all my friends and family for the 2-3 hour flight it took. So once we got there, Colette and I went out into the gate area at LAX. There's another 60 plus group of friends and family. So it was very emotional. And I said, okay, I'd love to give all of you a hug right now, but we got to get going and you'll understand later on why. And so we got everybody boarded. And I don't know if you've heard of this group called Airline Videos, but they park themselves on the top of this hotel at LAX and they film takeoffs and landings of various aircraft coming in every day. And so I reached out to them and asked them, hey, could you take a video of my final takeoff out of LAX, which they were able to do.
All right, hold on one second.
This has got to be absolutely amazing for the captain. Chartering his own A330neo, the Team USA special livery. So if you guys are just joining us, it's a captain retiring. Decided to charter his own A330neo heading to Kona with his family and friends for the next 24 hours. He'll be heading back to LAX tomorrow. There we go. Shout out. Just give us a shout out. Captain, thank you.
TB7, me for now.
Oh, I'm sure that caught Tater's attention.
United 44, that's SoCal departure. Good day, y'all.
Depart 447, Salon.
55, turn left, Alpha Alpha, and from a 24 left, contact ground point 6.
Left, Alpha Alpha, cross two, ground point 65, Delta 355.
Captain, have a great flight, family and friends.
Delta 80, 71 heavy, 240 at 7. RNF Ray, runway 24 left, clear.
RNF Delray, clear for takeoff. 4 left, Delta 8871.
614, LA Tower, good morning. Caution once. Runway 24 left, line up and wait.
Caution wait, clear runway. Liveway 24 left, stop. 14.
Off they go. Have a great time.
Morning, 7863, ILS 24 right.
7863, LA Tower, good morning. Wind 08, runway 24 right.
Captain, have a great time. Happy retirement.
14, 240 with 8, RNF A, runway 24 left.
Enjoy.
RNF Delray, clear for takeoff, 24
left. Has to be just an absolute day he will remember, chartering his own A330neo to Kona with family and friends. Thanks again, Captain, for the shout out.
have to go back and listen to that. Appreciate that. Thank you so much. Have a great flight.
That's the guy. They took a great video of the takeoff, which was really emotional for me. And then for the 5.5 hour flight out to Kona, my friend Jay said, hey, I'll come up and sit in the left seat for an hour. Go back and visit with your friends and family some more. So it worked out great. I get to do that. We all got great meals. And then we finally came in. And I always joke with my buddies that are getting ready to retire, make sure you get the landing prior to your last flight. Because if you make it really nice, you may not want to do another landing. You don't want to pound one in because you're going to remember that forever. I came in and I thought I had a good landing. It wasn't one I was ready to walk away from. So I knew I was going to fly one more, but it was okay. People in back, they were all happy. They didn't know any different. But we got out and my friend Peter, who's a photographer, got a great group picture of everybody in front of the jet. We had everybody transported to the resort. And why I wanted to get everybody there and get going was because I'd rented this area out called the Grand Staircase. And nobody knew this, but I was going to ask my wife to renew our wedding vows at the Grand Staircase. And so when I met her in August of 1977, I had just graduated from high school. She was getting ready to start her junior year of high school. I was wearing this yellow flowery Hawaiian shirt, and it sat in my closet over the last 40 plus years. And she'd always, what do you got that shirt in the closet for? What are you doing with that shirt? I said, you know what? You never know. I may need this shirt one day. So I'm just leaving it there. Don't throw it away. I had my friend Ellen, who'd introduced Colette to me. They worked at a Foster's Freeze ice cream parlor. And so I was wearing that yellow Hawaiian shirt the day I met Colette. So Ellen was part of the group. I had her hold on to that shirt. And when she came up onto the stage at the Grand Staircase, I took my shirt off and put on that yellow shirt. And of course, everybody's looking at me like, why is he doing this? And then I talked about my career and talked about the trip and all my friends. And then I had Colette come up and we renewed our vows. It was really a special moment. We had a great luau it was a 2 or 3 hour luau. Everybody had a great time. And then the next morning we picked up and flew back. And it's funny because, Tate, you'll recognize this in the 330. When you're on the comm panel, If you push the PA button, You've got to talk while you're pushing it. Push it and let go, you're not talking to other people.
You're not talking to anybody, which is a nice feature because the 7.6, you could get caught accidentally making PAs that you didn't want to make.
That ended up happening. We're with approach control at LAX, and I'm asking the first officer to say, hey, can you get 2-4 left or 2-4 right for us? Because there was some construction stuff. I wanted to land over there on the right side.
Yeah.
And so once we got that approval, I pushed the PA button thinking, okay, I can just let go. And this PA to my family and friends, hey, we're going to land on 2-4 right. We're coming in over Catalina right now. And of course, this is going out over approach control. And the controller goes, Captain, you're not going to do that on your last flight, are you? I said, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Delta 8872 heavy SoCal approach. Expect a visual approach to runway 2-4 right today.
I appreciate the help for Delta 8872.
No worries. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And this is my thing, everybody. We're at descending 10,000. We're on the south.
Goodbye. Can't do that on your last flight, sir. Yeah.
So,
Hey, at least it wasn't on guard and you get a bunch of guys jumping all over you.
It was a beautiful day in Los Angeles. We came in over Catalina. One of my buddies, my best friend, we flew right over his house in Huntington Beach and came in. And you know what it is? You've landed however many, several hundred times. And so all I'm thinking about is do not pound it in. Make this one nice and smooth. And so I gave myself a B on the landing. It could have been smoother, but everybody was happy. And I could hear people applauding in back, which made me feel good. And so we came off of 2-4 right, taxied across, and they made us go all the way down toward 2-5 and then circle back. And I was thinking to myself, that's kind of a waste of time, but whatever. On that taxi back is when they had the water cannon salute. And I found out later from my friend Nancy, who is the scheduler in the charter division, she's not somebody you tell no. So a couple months earlier, when I was in the pilot lounge, I went in and asked the chief pilot, I said, what's the chance of getting the water cannon salute? No, California, water moratorium. They don't do that here. We haven't had one of those in years. I said, okay, that's fine. Nancy calls up and gets the same reply from somebody at LAX. No, the water, we don't do that. She's okay. So a week later, she calls back, gets somebody higher up. I want a water cannon salute for Keith. He grew up here. His high school is by the runway. Him and his buddy were box boys at Safeway. I want this water cannon salute. And the guy said, all right, let me make some phone calls. They had to get approval from the FAA, the fire department, the LA Board Authority, and they did it. So I got the second water cannon salute in 9 years. And
unreal.
I owe that to Nancy. We came off the jet and the chief pilot came down and one of the district chief pilots came in that I knew and read a nice letter to everybody. Got a lot of good hugs goodbye. And then my friend Jay and Pete flew us back to Dallas. And that was pretty much it.
Wow. So I'd say it was worth it.
It was worth it. And here's another neat thing that I did. And the pilots that understand vacation and all that will understand. When I knew that I was going to fly this trip in January of 23, and they had told me, you're not going to get a jet in June because kids are out of school, families are on vacation. Those jets are all over the world. But our slow time is in February. Do you want to go on a Tuesday, Wednesday in February? We'll make it happen. Remember earlier, I told you my last flight in the F-16 was February 28th, 1991, the last night of the Gulf War. And just by chance, my last flight as a Delta pilot was February 28th, 2024, 33 years to the day later. And so that was neat to have that happen. In January of 23, I bid my 5 weeks of vacation to cover all of March and the first week of April. In January 24, I bid my 5 weeks to cover the last 3 weeks of April and the first 2 weeks of May. And then I took my vacation bank and bought 10 extra days, which is the limit. So essentially, that trip ended on February 28th, and I'm on vacation until May 21st.
Amazing.
I'm gone non-qualified for landing. Crew Resources is going to try to send me to training. I said, I'm not showing up. You want to keep it on the schedule, good luck, but I won't be there. And then I'll retire officially on June 7th.
That's incredible. What a story.
And there's one more important point with that. If you have vacation, the way things work with Delta, if you have vacation that comes after your retirement, you still get paid out, but it goes into your 401k. In my case, it was all pre-retirement. So it gets paid to me and it counts for profit sharing for next year.
Ha!
So
very nice.
Yeah. And our vacation days are worth $4.15, I think, a day right now. And if you look at, for me personally, I always try to get 80 hours a month. 31 days of vacation is like 130 hours in April. So I'm getting some nice checks here during this vacation. And I anticipate if things go well, that next February, I'll get another profit sharing check.
It's the best career, isn't it? It's just the best career in the world.
Life is good.
Life is good.
And to the guys that complain, get a life.
Thank you.
Quit complaining.
Thank you. I know. Hey, I tell you what, Ryan and I can talk to this. Go get a real job. It's rough. It's rough out here. Yeah. Yeah. Flying airplanes is great.
When we had the bankruptcy, there were guys that were in their early 50s that thought Delta was going to go out of business. So they took $300,000 or $400,000 out of their 401k and just left. And I talked to some of those guys. I knew some of those guys. And they said, you know what? I made the biggest mistake in my life leaving. I found out that at 52 years old, you cannot find a job that pays you $100,000 a year where you only work 12 days a month. They're out there. One friend went back in the military and he went to Iraq to fly drones for a year because he couldn't get a job anywhere at 52. And it is a great job. And I don't even think of it as a job. It's a great lifestyle.
It is. It absolutely is. What's next for you, Keith? Yeah. What's the next chapter? It has to be emotional to hang up that uniform for the last time. You're on to the next thing. What is it? What's life look like?
When I flew up to Salt Lake the other night, it was the first time I was on a Delta jet in 2 months. And I made the mistake a few weeks ago of checking open time. And I saw there was a military charter where you go to Tokyo, south of Japan, Anchorage. And I thought, oh, what a great trip that would be to fly. I thought, you know what? I shouldn't be looking at this. So I stopped looking at open time. And my wife and I look forward to driving around the country, seeing some of the national parks and places we've never been. We've got our home here. I can go skiing in the winter, hiking in the summer. I belong to a nice club that I can play golf with my buddies, twin girls, two grandchildren. So I'd be lying if I said I wouldn't miss it at times. You'll certainly miss the camaraderie in the cockpit, and being able to go on a trip somewhere is always neat and exciting. But after 41 years, I'm okay.
Makes a lot of sense. What a class act. Thank you for sharing your story with us. It's just incredible to hear it straight from the source and get all the details around it, the history and everything.
Thank you. Yeah. It's been a pleasure to be with you guys today. And I hope those that are young, can I tell another story?
Yes, please.
A lot of the guys were complaining about the lost defined benefit and lost pensions and all that. So I decided to take a fictional pilot, age 30 years old, and I put this pilot in the right seat of a 220 for 4 years, a 320 for 4 years, a 330 for 4 years, and a 350 for 4 years. So they're going to be right seat for the first 16 years of their career. Move them over to the left seat, 220, 4 years, 320, 330, the last 7 years, 350. All we had before this contract was 2019 pay rates. So for every one of the seats they were in, for whatever year it was, I gave them that pay at 80 hours a month, no green slips, no double time. I gave them 10% put into their 401k. I gave them a 5% profit sharing check each year, and I gave them a return on investment of a little over 7%. And you can Google 30-year return on investment. It's a little over 7%. So taking that individual at age 65, based on 2019 pay rates, that individual would have about $7.8 million for retirement. If they wanted to leave at 60, about $5.5 million. They wanted to leave at 55, about $3.5 million. So going back, if you're that 65-year-old, and we'll just say now with the new contract and getting raises, not just stuck at the 2019 pay rates for 35 years, there's a lot of factors that go into it. But let's just say you had $10 million. If you're taking out 4% a year, you're making 400 grand a year in retirement. You don't need to work again. Now, again, the caveat is everybody's got a different situation, and I respect and understand that. But the point was, you can be okay. You can have a great career, and you can save and live within your means and do well.
Absolutely.
I agree.
Yeah, totally. And it goes back to those fundamentals that you talked about right in the beginning, which is you get the pay raise, you start putting it away. And when you live within your means, and I think if you just do that and show up, it's a great career. And there's going to be bumps and hiccups along the way, but you just kind of got to work through that and know that people still need to fly airplanes. Eventually, it's going to all come back.
I agree.
Which is great. So Keith, thank
you
so much for your time, and congratulations on such a great career and just something that is just so inspiring. The story, what you did, how to go out in style. I saw some of your posts, just all the things that you did along the way that just make being an airline pilot so, so wonderful. Buying pizzas for your ground crew on a maintenance delay at an airport and just standing up and being the captain, right? I mean, that's what it's all about. Just that's what makes the memories that we remember forever, not just the complaining and the things that happen in the cockpit that everyone wants to just complain about or whatever, but it's those moments where people can stand up and do just wonderful things and take care of other people and look out for your friends that didn't get retirement flights. That's what this is all about at the end of the day. And I just really appreciate having people like you in our lives to be that example.
I've had an incredible life, incredible career, and flying with guys just like you made it all worthwhile. And I'll miss that. I'll miss that part of it.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Happy trails.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Congrats on retirement again.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming onto the show. All right, guys. And thanks for listening. And with that, we'll see you on the next episode.